Mars will come to fear my botany powers.
Hello and welcome to episode 84 of Popcorn and Prosecco, a show that's all about talking about movies. I am Perry Nemiroff, and here are my co-hosts, Christy Puchko and Angie Han.
Hello.
Hey, everybody.
This week, we've got a double review for you. We're going to do the first half of the show on The Martian, and then we're going to wrap up with a review of Goodnight Mommy. So first off is The Martian. Here is the IMDb synopsis. During a manned mission to Mars, astronaut Mark Watney is presumed dead after a fierce storm and left behind by his crew. But Watney has survived and finds himself stranded and alone on the hostile planet. With only meager supplies, he must draw upon his ingenuity, wit, and spirit to subsist and find a way to signal to Earth that he is alive. That's pretty accurate.
Yeah, it sounds dull, though. Like, that sounds like a very dry narrative, but it's not. That's my only complaint about it. It's an accurate synopsis, but it gives no indication of how really dramatic and fun this movie is.
I guess it's hard to do that in a two-sentence synopsis,
though. Yeah, I'm with Perry. Like, I get what you're saying.
I was actually kind of impressed by that synopsis, but that's not what we're reviewing on the show. I thought the
really,
movie was
really, because
awesome.
We review the synopsis every goddamn time.
A little bit, yeah.
That's just be our
check
new
your
podcast.
Bingo card.
I thought this movie was great. I loved everything about it, and I've been complaining a lot when I've been writing up. I'm not sure if you guys have seen all the trailers and stuff that they released, but I've had a really hard time wrapping my head around how it's going to be, like, this big, epic rescue mission and take it seriously because there's so much humor in all the promotional material. But I thought that the differing tones throughout the movie worked exceptionally well. I found the whole thing really, like, suspenseful and thrilling. And then I kind of needed those lighthearted moments. Like, nothing's been driving me crazier than that line where he goes, I'm gonna science the shit out of this. Because, like, I mean, really... Who would say that? But then in the movie,
people say that all the time. That sounds like something I would say.
That's my new favorite thing to say,
regardless of how accessible.
Well, I was not buying that in the promotional campaign, but in the movie, it worked really freaking well, and that line made me want to cheer at the screen.
I do feel like that's one thing that this movie gets right that I loved about it is, as you pointed out, how funny it is. Like, it's. I feel like when you're making a survival drama, you know, the obvious choice, the obvious direction to go is, like, very gritty and sad and, like, you know, a reckoning of the human spirit or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But it kind of, I think it does, and, you know, not that there's anything wrong with that approach, but it was really refreshing to see a movie that's about someone in a terrible situation and kind of, you know, maintaining their idealism and their optimism and hope in spite of that. And it was refreshing, and I feel like the danger when you have too many movies that are all, like, you know, I feel like there's this perception that if you're a serious drama, you have to be, like, you know, really grim and gritty and, like, but that's not the human experience. You know, if you're a person, you have things that are fucked up. And, like, there are parts of this movie where he's understandably, like, very fucked up. But, you know, joy and hope and optimism and humor is a large part of it, too.
Yeah, I think that actually is part of why the movie spoke to me so much, too, is that it's not this bleak, unrelenting. I mean, like, he gets left on Mars and everyone thinks he's dead. Like, if there's ever a situation where you could understandably throw in the towel, that's it. But instead, he recognizes the situation. He's not at all, like, idealistic, I don't think is the right term, because he's not. He's very realistic about, like, these are all the things I have to do to survive, and then he does them. And there's, like, a moment where he talks about that, and it actually reminded me a lot of what I felt like Tomorrowland was trying to do, which is talk about the power of a positive attitude and the power of, like, I can make a difference, and, like, that's what Mark does. He looks around him and says, okay, I only have enough food that was supposed to last 6 people for something like 30 days or whatever. And then he does the math and he's like, okay, I have to grow food on Mars. And then he has to figure that out. And it's crazy to me because, like, this is a Ridley Scott movie, and Ridley Scott applies his, like, ability to make really exciting, intense action scenes to all of these little tasks, like setting up a garden or him mending his own skin because he gets pierced, like, very early on in the movie by debris. And like, all of that is incredibly tense. So in that, you need a moment of levity. You need something, because then otherwise this movie would just make you nauseous with tension. And instead, Mark Watney is not just really smart and really, like, can do. He's also kind of cocky. So he has these moments where he says stuff like, I'm going to science the shit out of this. Or there's one part where he just says, like, fuck you, Mars. And it's like the film has to cut around the use of the word fuck so they can keep a PG-13 rating. And that one use of fuck is beautifully used. But it's like all those things make him feel human. They make him feel relatable. And they make the movie feel fun and not just like heart-wrenchingly scary. It's still very scary.
That's the same case, too, with the large majority of characters in this movie. And this movie has an absolutely enormous supporting cast. Like, this should not work at all. There's basically three
sections
to
this. Everyone is in this movie.
There's three sections to this movie.
It's Black Mass, like, that everybody that shows up, you're like, ooh.
It's the stuff on Mars, it's the stuff at NASA, and then it's the stuff on, I always get, like, Ares and Hermes confused. Which is which?
Hermes is the one that the space people are on when they decide
that's,
to turn around.
That's like the docking state, the bigger one, right? And yeah. Then the Ares is the one that goes, whatever, technicalities. But all of that works really well. The way the movie jumps from one to the other makes like their little contained situation feel super important, but then they're all intertwined really well too. And there were a lot of super memorable characters outside of Watney.
It's actually really interesting because you would, like, I think that hearing that the film doesn't just stay with him, it's like, because I compared it to Castaway a lot in my spinoff review, but unlike Castaway where we're only on the island, we keep leaving Mark and Mars to go to the Hermes where the rest of his crew are, to go to Earth where NASA's trying to figure out what the hell to do. And the movie never loses tension when it leaves him, which is really impressive. And it's partially because Scott has filled the cast with just incredible actors who just turn it out. Everybody in this is so good. And it's like we were talking before about, like last week we talked about Black Mass, how frustrating it was when these characters would show up and then have nothing to do. Like, they have stuff to do in this, and it's just so much fun to watch them breathe into this movie. And another thing that I personally found really exciting in the casting is not just are they great actors, but also there's a real diversity in color, creed, gender.
Yeah.
And so watching the movie, yeah, and it feels
where
it feels
was
authentic.
That when he
feels,
was casting fucking Exodus Gods and Kings, I ask you.
Yeah, like, clearly Ridley Scott did hear people when they were like, wait, what do you mean all the Egyptians are white people? So, like, in this, it's like, and what I also loved about that, about seeing all these different people from Chiwetel Ejiofor to Danny Glover.
Donald Glover. I know, it's counterintuitive that the younger one is Donald and the older one is Danny, but that's just how it works.
That's exactly it. It throws me off every time. Anyway, Jessica Chastain's in it. Kate Mara's in it.
Jessica Chastain's great in this. I keep comparing her role in this to what she got in
Interstellar.
And it's like, it's incredible. I mean, this is a much more well-written and well-developed character, but it just goes to show what she can do with this
kind of person.
Less screen
time in this, but a better developed character.
Are you guys talking about Kate Mara or Jessica Chastain?
I was talking about Jessica Chastain.
Oh, that's funny. In Interstellar. I'm sorry, a train went by, so I was having a hard time even with my headphones on. Because I have all the windows open because it's not a million degrees in New York today. Sorry. Yeah, no, Jessica Chastain and Interstellar is definitely a parallel. But the thing I wanted to say about the diversity is that it also, it makes the movie feel like the real world in a bigger way because you're like, oh, it's not just super handsome white people that live in this world. But also,
Although the crew of that spaceship, I mean, I did not know that perfect cheekbones were a prerequisite for becoming an astronaut.
I think it's probably just like, it doesn't hurt, but it helps, it's not required, but it
helps. Oh, I'm not complaining, but I was like, that is an absurdly pretty spaceship crew.
But also,
well,
they
have to pose for that pretty picture, you know, before they go on their mission. Maybe that plays
a factor. Gets more funding for NASA. But what I wanted to say about the, because there's also a celebration of nerd culture in the film that I really thought was honest, and by bringing in all these people, it felt really smart and really aware of nerd culture, because it's not just the science stuff. There's like, this is like a big like hooray for science movie, but there's also like really like winking references to like Iron Man and Lord of the Rings, and it's a very smart awareness of a genre. I just thought this was outstanding.
I know we've been talking about the cast as a whole and how great it is that there are so many people and how diverse it is, but I also just want to draw special attention to Matt Damon, who, I mean, he has the hardest job because the movie really doesn't work unless you really are buying into his character, and this seems like the Matt Damon-iest role that you could possibly think of. I think it just makes such good use of why people like him, like, you know, not just not just that he's talented, but that he has this like innate likability and charisma and sense of humor that I think they really let shine through in this movie. So I just before we wrap up, I just wanted to say, yes, it's a great cast all around, but Matt Damon, oh my God, this is
I wouldn't be surprised if he snuck his way into the best actor category, because I don't think there's not all that much competition, I don't think.
Who's he going to be up against? Even Johnny Depp?
Eddie Redmayne, the kid from Room. Yeah. That's all I could think of off the top of my head right now. But there's not even any, like, actory moments in this. But I guarantee you, if The Martian comes out and blows the box office away, that's when I'm going to start putting my money on him to at least get a nomination.
Yeah, I think he's a lock for a nomination, honestly, especially because he manages to use the direct address in the movie of Watney talking directly to the journal log cameras or whatever. He manages to make even that work, which is a really tricky device. So yeah, I think this movie is brilliant. I cried throughout, and not all because I was sad. I cried at one point because I was just really nervous. I cried at one point because I was sad, and I cried at one point because I was super happy. Oh, and I just want to say before we finish up this review, it also has a kick-ass soundtrack that I'm in love with.
Hates the soundtrack, though.
It is true. I walked out of this. What's the song that plays over the end credits?
I Will Survive
at the very end of the movie. Yeah, and of course Gloria I walked Gaynor. Out with it stuck in my head.
Yeah, all right. That's great.
So thumbs up all around for The Martian.
Yeah, go see The Martian. It comes out October 2nd. Just do it.
All right. So on to our next movie, which is a very very different movie. Good night, Mommy. Christy, it's all yours.
Yeah, I don't know how we transitioned. So basically, this came out a couple of weeks ago, and Angie and I so wanted to talk to Perry specifically about it that we had to wait until Perry got back from TIFF. And Perry was good enough to go see this last night. So Goodnight Mommy is an Austrian horror movie, and here's the plot synopsis. Twin boys move to a new home with their mother after she has a face-changing cosmetic surgery, but under her bandages is someone the children don't recognize.
Huh. So a new... Wait. A new home?
I didn't get that from watching the movie. It doesn't really matter that much, I don't think.
I just find that interesting.
But it's about twin boys, and their mom comes home and her face is covered in bandages. You've probably seen the trailer. It's bonkers and creepy. And they begin to suspect that it's not really their mother. And what's so exciting is that the film from like the earliest scenes has this kind of dark fairy tale tone to it. There's the imagery in the beginning is them wandering through a wood and it's shot in this kind of surreal way. So when they believe that their mother is not their mother, you're like, oh, it's like a fairy tale. And so you're excited and like, what's this going to be? And then you see the mother like poking at her own body in really strange ways. And there's elements of body horror and she behaves really strangely to her children. And it starts building this very, it's a slow burn sensation, but it's a very sinister story that I thought was, I don't know, it's probably one of my favorite movies this year. I just thought it was really exciting and scary.
Perry, I'm dying to know what you thought.
Yeah, I think this was a very, very well done movie in every single respect. Like, I can't really pick out one element of this production that kind of was subpar in any respect. The one problem that I had with it was that I thought it did an absolutely incredible job making me uncomfortable through most of the movie, too. Like, Christy just called it a slow burn, but that doesn't mean, like, the horror doesn't start right at the beginning. It's a hard thing to watch, whether you're looking at, like, the bloodier portions of the film or just, like, the behavior that's happening between these kids and their mother. The one thing that kind of stopped it from being... like this great movie that could potentially be on my top 10 of the year for horror is the fact that after suffering through all of that, I kind of felt like I didn't get anything out of it. Like,
really? I need to respond to that.
There was no message and I didn't really care for the ending.
I want to talk about that.
We'll get to the ending in a minute. We are going to go into spoilers, but Angie, do you want to weigh in before we go into spoilers?
Yes, I would because, Basically, so I can kind of see both sides, honestly. So the thing about this movie is that it is an incredibly uncomfortable watch to the point where I literally, like, there was, I think you can probably guess what scene this happened in, but there's a long, very, like, awful scene that where I started to think, I'm going to walk out of this movie. I can't possibly see what would be worth sitting through this, and I was starting to get mad at the movie because I was like, I can't believe you made me sit through all that slow burn, like, uncomfortable shit so that you could subject me to this bullshit. And I was like kind of pissed off, and then but then I stuck around mostly because no one else was leaving. I didn't want to be like that asshole. So, like, not for, like, artistic integrity reasons, just because I was like, well, I don't want to be the weirdo. Anyway, but I stuck around.
It was a small screening room. Everybody would have been like, I saw Angie Hahn leave.
And then by the time I got to the end, I almost resent the movie for actually making me like it in spite of how much I hated it to the point where I wanted to walk out. But I thought that what they do with it in the end is so clever and so well constructed that I was really amazed and I was really happy I stuck around. That all that said, before we get into spoilers, I'll just say that I think Christy kind of had an emotional reaction to it that I thought that I didn't have because I don't think it's as well equipped. All right, this is getting super vague to the point of
yeah.
Yeah. Let's just go into spoilers. Spoilers. If you haven't seen it, seriously, this is a movie where if you haven't seen it, this is not a movie you want spoiled for you. It's a lot more fun if you discover the ending
I will
yourself.
Say this,
so
for people who are afraid they can't handle what Angie's talking about, and that's totally understandable. We wrote about it on Pajiba, so if you're one of those people that wants to enjoy the conversation or whatever, you can go to Pajiba, and we'll have a link below.
All right, spoiler time. I have a question for you guys first. How quickly did you pick up on the twist?
I'm pretty late.
Let's say what the twist is first so that people that that haven't gotten to see the movie yet but don't care about spoilers can know. So basically the scene that Angie's referring to is that the twin boys trap their mother, tie her to her bed, and effectively torture her. Now, it's a very long sequence, and it's low on gore, but it's very high on, like, violence.
Well, okay, I'll say this. I mean, I was thinking about it, and it's not that it's, like, a gorier or more violent scene than I've seen in other movies. It's the way that the movie presents it. For one thing, it's presented in these, like, long close-up takes where you can't really look away. For another, they kind of, I think the way that they instructed the actors to play the scene, it feels very, very natural and realistic. So then when this woman who's tied up is, like, crying out in pain, it didn't, even though, you know, in my head, obviously, I know it's just an actor, like, you know, playing pretend, but it, like, I felt it viscerally, and it made me so incredibly uncomfortable, despite the fact that, honestly, if I told you what happened in the scene, you'd be like, that doesn't sound that bad.
Yeah. So what's crazy is that, basically, in this sequence, it's ultimately revealed that the twins are not exactly twins anymore, because one of them died. And so one of the characters you've been seeing the whole movie is actually the kind of a figment of his brother's imagination, which is why the mother doesn't talk to him, which is why she says things like, don't talk to your brother, don't listen to your brother. And all of a sudden, your allegiance in the film is supposed to switch from the boys who are afraid of their mom to the mom who is now being tortured by her son. And I really like the movie because, one, I did not see that twist coming right away, and two, I'll answer your question in a second, Perry, and two, that torture scene is what transitioned it, and it was partially because it starts getting shot differently, like all of a sudden the lights are up and it has a more, like a less surreal lighting, but it made me realize that I had been trusting an unreliable narrator, and I was enjoying the ride of that, even though I was in a fetal position with my, like, fists in front of my face, like I was horrified. But yeah, I didn't figure out what happened until the last sequence when the mother is in the living room, but slightly before she says, I'll pretend Lucas is alive.
I figured it out like a few seconds after Christy, basically.
I figured it
she
out.
She knows that
maybe
because when we saw it, I went like this.
wait, sorry. What did Perry say?
I figured it out 2 minutes into the movie.
I've actually
the shot that gave it away for me is when they're exploring the woods in like the opening sequence, and it's that shot of one of them walking into the dark tunnel and then the other one following them. I'm like, ah, I see what you're doing here. And sure enough, after that was like all I could focus on was every little like trick and like trying to figure out which boy was which and how the mother was talking, and I was like obsessed with looking at her eyeline too, and basically trying to like spoil it further for myself. I just got obsessed with that. But I will say that transition from siding with the boys to siding with the mother is really well done, and it's kind of fascinating how like you can feel one way and then switch to the other. Because even though that I did pick up on the fact that one of the twins was dead, it didn't mean that I like felt differently towards them. I was still given the impression at the beginning that they were in the right.
I have heard from a few people that some people apparently figured out the twist really quickly. I and was not one of them. I figured it out very late in the game. And by figured it out, I mean the movie just told me what the twist was, and I was like, oh, okay. And actually, one of the things I loved about it, though, is I think when I thought back on the movie, I loved the twist because even though I didn't see it coming, the second I knew what it was, I thought back and I thought, oh my God, this movie has been telegraphing the twist from the very beginning. And that was actually something I loved about it, because to me that made the movie feel like it's a twist that, it's a movie that comes by its crazy twist honestly. It's a twist that completely recontextualizes everything you have seen, but it's not a twist that's done in a cheap way where they like have been lying to you or purposely hiding things from you. I mean, like that shot that you mentioned, like that was one of the first things I thought of when I realized what the twist was, oh my God, like from the very first scene, this movie has actually been telling me all along. And it's so, and even the fact that, like, you know, the boy is kind of imaginary, the movie sets that up by showing you like scenes that are essentially just like daydream sequences. So you already kind of know that you're watching an unreliable narrator. I don't know. I think in the end, despite how uncomfortable I was, I couldn't help but really just admire how well crafted this film was.
Yeah, I to me it reminded me of The Babadook, in that we shift from like hating the kid to liking the kid, but it's a swap of that, and then also the mother-son relationship. But it's interesting to me, Perry, that you don't think the film had a message, because for me, I thought there was this message about the importance of being connected, and about how, you know, basically the two of them dealt the trauma of losing the son, of losing Lucas, in ways so disparate from each other, there was no coming back. Like, she went and got plastic surgery so she could kind of refresh her face or whatever, or make a new life, and I guess maybe if the plot synopsis is right, get a new home. And he dug deep into the past and wouldn't let go, and it created this collision that was only going to bring them heartbreak. And so ultimately, it was a tragic story, not just like a scary story, and that really spoke to me. I thought that was really beautiful. I'm really excited to see. I want to see it again.
But the thing is, I get what you're saying, but you don't really feel the tragedy like you did in The Babadook. And I think this is where I kind of feel like I liked it more than Perry, maybe, but less than Christy, because in The Babadook, you kind of like, you know, it's a growing awareness of just how sad that movie is. In this, like, by the time you figure out that it's actually a very tragic story, you're like, you have like 2 minutes left of the movie.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, I could see what you're saying, but I feel like if I was going to feel that, it'd be like pulling teeth from the movie, you know, like trying to pull that out and like make myself feel it. It definitely didn't leave me with that feeling. And I walked out like, this is probably why, okay, I think this is a great movie and there's so many things that need to be celebrated here. But at the same time, I have a really hard time recommending it to people because of how I felt when I walked out.
Now, how did you feel?
I was just like kind of upset.
Upset about what?
I just, I felt very uncomfortable. And then I felt like I wasn't like given anything in return for feeling uncomfortable for so long.
All right, we're going a little over, but I just want to say that is exactly what, like, that was exactly my like thing that I couldn't decide, because I told you guys this movie made me so uncomfortable I wanted to walk out. But in the end, I felt, I think probably in a large part because I didn't see the twist coming, I felt like my quote unquote suffering had been rewarded, because I was so bowled over by that twist and so like in awe of how they pulled it off. And I kind of wonder if, but at the same time, I didn't get to the level that Christy did, where she felt the most. That definitely could have been my problem.
I mean, not having seen the twist coming for so long, it's like I didn't get that reward that many other people got in the end, just because like I saw it coming from the second the movie started.
Sure. Interesting. Okay, well, I think we have to wrap up. So where are we on Goodnight Mommy? Would you recommend it?
I think I'd have to say no.
So interesting. I thought you'd be a champion for this movie. I'm fascinated.
I would say maybe. I don't know. I cannot in good faith recommend a movie that made me want to walk out. And I do think that Perry has a really good point about the emotions not hitting as hard as they could have. But at the same time, if you like horror movies, this is a really well-made one, so you should see it for that reason.
Yeah. I'm recommending it to people with the caveat of, if you are squeamish, I don't think that this movie is going to be easy to watch, and that, you know, kind of judge your own mileage on that. But yeah. I'm really glad we got to review it together, because I'm excited that we got to dig into that. All right, so that's everything from us.
All right, that's a wrap on episode 84 of Popcorn Prosecco. You know where to find us. Please subscribe on iTunes, and it'd be super helpful if you could rate and comment over there as well. We have our website, popcornprosecco.com. We are on Twitter at Popcorn Prosecco. We also have Facebook, where you can go like us. And then all three of us are all over the internet as well. Christy, you want to take it first?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at Christy Puchko. It's KristyPuchko. And my career highlights at our decadentcriminals.com.
Angie?
You can find me on Twitter at AJHAN, and I write for slashfilm.com.
And you can catch my writing on collider.com, and my Twitter handle is PNemiroff. Thank you guys so much for listening, and we'll see you next time. There's a star.